If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed at this whole having a Star Trek podcast situation. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
How you doing today, Adam?
Ben, I'm a little irked, I guess you could say.
Irked, really?
Yeah. You remember that whole Jaeger bubble that I was setting up?
Yeah. We haven't really talked about it on the show, though.
So what I did a couple weeks ago, completely without asking you if it was a good idea or asking any financial advisor if this is possible, was that I created an artificial Jaeger bubble, which involved me buying every signed Biff Jaeger card I could find on the internet. And
yeah.
I don't know if I've ever showed you this, Ben, but because we're on camera, here is my stack of Jaegers.
Yeah.
Which is a good fist size of Jaegers.
Yeah.
And
yeah, you sent me a cell phone picture of it with your camera phone.
So satisfied that I now owned all the Jaegers that could be purchased, I set out to sell one of the Jaegers for exactly $999.99.
You don't need the penny.
And wouldn't you know it, some of our viewers noticed.
Yeah.
Some of our viewers who had already purchased Jaegers of their own.
Right.
One of them listed their Jaeger for a dollar less than mine. And guess what, Ben?
What?
He has said that someone has bought his Jaeger for that price.
Oh, that burns my toast, Adam.
Yeah.
That boils my tea Earl Grey hot.
I did it so I could make $1,000, not one of our viewers. Now, to be clear, I'm very happy that my Jaeger bubble has benefited one of our viewers.
That's, yeah, but like,
I think it's very cool.
But like, we need to get our beaks wet on that, right?
I know, right? Like, I mean, I hate to say it, but I feel like we should be taxing these Jaegers, right?
Yeah.
Are these not taxable Jaegers based on the strength of the bubble that I myself created?
We're sort of like the National Jaeger Authority, and any top dollar Jaeger sales, in order to be sanctioned, should probably go through us, and we should take a percentage.
I also feel like whoever sold this Jaeger, this other Jaeger...
Do you think did they definitely sell it, or is it just... Are they like passing off a screenshot that makes it look as though it's been sold?
Well, I can't be sure that I'm not being fucked with, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, so like, that's the other thing is like, if you made it look like somebody bought the Jaeger that Adam put up there for $1,000, or if you did in fact sell one for almost $1,000, that destroys our ability to make money off of our own comedy show, right? It's kind of a dick move.
It kind of is. In
unless you're forwarding a percentage of the proceeds, which helps us produce this show that you stole an idea from.
Yeah, I think I can sense your anger, Ben. your anger growing, much like my own. Our intention was to give these valuable prizes away at our live shows.
It mainly burns my toast because I did the math on our live shows, and like by the time all of the expenses we incurred in doing it were added in, it was like not even a break-even proposition. It was like thinnest of break-evens, if not a little bit of a loss. And that's like a whole, you know, we spent a lot of time doing that.
Break-even would feel like a big win to me at this point.
Yeah.
And I hope, because we're recording this deep into the future,
right,
that we have. But
maybe this person has already atoned for their sin.
I don't know. But it's disappointing on a number of levels, Ben.
Yeah. Ugh.
One thing that didn't disappoint me at all was this episode, today's episode, which I really enjoyed. It's season 4, episode 14, Clues. First duty of every Starfleet officer is to the truth, scientific truth, or historical truth, or personal truth. It begins with Picard sort of taking Guinan camping, right? Like, he just sort of gets on the captain's log, and he's like, look, we got to... I've done a benevolent captain thing here, and I've given the crew some free time to do the things that they love to do. So we do sort of a tour around the ship. We see Beverly making some cotton candy in Six Bay. We see other people doing whatever it is they're doing, and then we go finally to
Worf
the holodeck.
Worf is teaching a Tai Chi class.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Klingon Tai Chi, which is super fun.
Yeah.
And we see Guinan walking into the holodeck in Dixon Hill appropriate garb, looking for the captain.
Yeah, she goes in there, and the Dixon Hill receptionist lady is there, really resisting the
who
idea.
Who still probably has more lines than Colm Meaney at this point, right? Like more total lines of dialogue.
Yeah, I love the idea that they were like 2 years later. We're like, hey. My agent just called. He said that they're bringing me back to play extremely stereotypical receptionist character on that space show. So I got another gig. Pretty cool.
I had just quit smoking cigarettes too. So
yeah,
kind of conflicted.
I need to ask my boss at Denny's if I can take a couple of days off for the shooting schedule.
Meanwhile, Colm's just taking a lot of naps on his Star Wagon.
Yeah, the deal is like she doesn't want to let Guinan into the office, but Guinan barges in, and Picard as Dixon Hill is being held up by a gangster with a gun, and the gangster is saying like, "Oh, you stole money from me," and they're like doing real bad gangster accents, and the guy goes over by the window, gets filled up with machine gun bullets from like a drive-by shooting onto a second or third floor office, I guess.
Kind of a great shot if that's the case.
Yeah. Yeah. The like guy with the Tommy gun in the passenger side of the Stutz Bearcat below is like, "Oh, there's a guy with a fedora. That's got to be Hill."
Just waiting for a shadow to cross the window.
Yeah, and Guinan is like, "Wait, so what do we do?" And Picard is like, "It's a mystery. Like, this guy thought we stole his money, and now we got to figure out like who he was, why he thought that, who it was that shot him. This is fun." And she's like, "This is fun?"
That's why I called it camping, because this is a conversation I have both participated in and heard many times over. Like, when one person tries to convince the other person that their form of recreation is fun in the way that camping is, Guinan's like, "I do this all the time in the bar. Like, I'm listening to people's conversations there. I'm trying to help them come up with solutions to their problems based on the clues they give me. Like, I'm in this holodeck and I'm wearing garters. Like, this is not fun for me."
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of made me wonder how much fun Guinan has at all. Like, the way she's asking about fun almost sounds like Data asking about emotions.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I can't think of like a time where she's been like enjoying herself. Like, I can think of times when Riker and Troy and the Doctor. Like, I can think of them all having, like, fun. I can even think of O'Brien doing something that would, like, theoretically be fun if he didn't break his arm while he was doing it.
In a weird way, like, she does not participate in, like you say, either the recreational activities that the crew does.
Yeah.
But also, she does not participate in group activities that I can remember. Like,
yeah.
She only has one-offs with people, for the most part. Can you recall a time where she's, like, been in a McLaughlin group, even? Like, I think she was during their contact with the Borg, but, like... Yeah. But
was she ever in a card game?
But, like, she didn't go to the wedding in 10 Forward.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been a... Like, it happens at her workplace. You'd think she'd be involved at some level. I don't think she plays cards either, and I bet she'd be
She was off
at
in the bean flicking office during that wedding.
Yeah, it feels too much like work for her.
Yeah.
That's a great question.
Some questions raised about Guinan, but they get a phone call, and it's Data on the other end, and he's like, I did not want to break the continuity of your play acting by calling you up on the communicator, so I'm calling you on this phone in the holodeck. Something's up.
He could have gone, like, with the 1920s vaudeville voice there, too. Like,
yeah.
If he really wanted to go for it, he kind of missed an opportunity to have some fun with it.
Yeah.
You see, we got some weird gases out there, Captain.
We got some weird gases, and I'm not talking about what's coming out of your wife's keister. One thing, yeah, with Data's ability to mimic accents, he can mimic accents, but he can't do contractions.
Yeah, that'd be difficult.
He can roll an R, but he can't say N apostrophe T.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. This show is really starting to fall apart.
It's a real barrier to his comedy.
Mm-hmm. Well, they get up to the bridge, and these gaseous anomalies they've been scanning or whatever, they've turned up a Class M planet, and regulations are that if they discover a planet that might have life, they got to go try and make contact, or at least see what's up.
And, they have that obligation.
So they head in, and things are starting to look real strange, and the view screen fills with a big space butthole, and it's one of the kinds that knocks everybody out. And Data, like, turns around and looks at the bridge, and everybody's, like, slumped over their controls or sleeping on the floor.
They composed that scene really well, because you don't see them slump and fall over in a way that might read as ham and cheese. Like,
right.
What you are is that you have your single shot on Data, and then you pull out wide, and it reveals the rest of the bridge crew having already passed out. I thought it was very effective and not cheesy.
Yeah, I wonder if they shot both things, and that was a choice in editing. Like, oh, this kind of works better if we don't see them all go down.
Yeah, because that never looks good. Like, and you've seen it a bunch on this show, like when someone drops a banger on the ship.
Yeah.
Or if
people are always fainting.
Yeah, it just doesn't look
it's
quite
very Victorian.
Right. You get Data's wig guy out there to take a fall. I mean, I think they learned from those early season episodes that it doesn't look great. Why not just take it out of consideration altogether?
Come back from the title sequence, and Data is helping Picard get up, and they all kind of like dust themselves off, and they're like, well, what the hell just happened? And Data's like, you were all asleep for 30 seconds, and I brought you back, but we went through a wormhole, and we're like a day's travel from where we started. It's pretty crazy. And they're like, wow, we should go back and see what happened. And he's like, well, that's not a great idea. And,
yeah, we don't want that to happen again, right, guys?
Yeah, I mean, his argument is, like, fairly sound. That could be hazardous to their navigation if they go back to where they just all got knocked out and spat out a day away from where they were.
He's like, look, look at what's much more expendable at this point is just shooting a probe out there. So let's do that.
Yeah, so they do it, and they get back that it's like a gas giant and not an M-class planet like they thought. And they're like, that's weird. And they're sort of like all being asked to just go about their day like they didn't all, you know, all pass out at once. And, you know, Data seems to be doing a lot of headcanon about what went down. And they start to, like, get a little suspicious of what's going on. And the first person that really is, like, pushing the theory that they were asleep for much longer is the doctor. She discovers that her cotton candy grew quite a bit more than cotton candy is supposed to grow in the amount of time they're being told. She's got like 24 hours of cotton candy growth.
Yeah, she and sort of has a good supply of cotton candy here.
Yeah, she puts it in like one of those like things that artsy people take cupcakes in to parties, you know? And
yeah, she puts it on Picard's table and Picard's like, God, looks delicious.
Yeah,
and it's presented so tastefully.
Let me eat on one of these. What's up? Would this go good with Earl Grey?
Beverly's doing that thing where she's like, you remember a couple episodes ago when I told you that something was wrong with the universe? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm back at it again.
Back at it again with the white fans. Yeah, and maybe a little bit of a reversal on everybody reflexively placing 100% faith in what the doctor is saying.
Yeah.
Although, in this context, I guess Data is there to say something the opposite. So maybe they're more just withholding judgment until they have a better explanation. But
a great bit of story structure, though, like that uses our knowledge of the crew and their strengths to help tell it. Like, of course, if there's a mystery involved and you have pieces of evidence here and pieces of evidence here, you're going to corroborate that with Data. Like, hey, Data, Beverly's talking about her weird cotton candy needing, you know, a day to grow this amount. What do you think about that? And Data's form of being a second interview, of his form of corroboration takes the form of, while it is possible that blank, I would argue that it's blank.
Right.
And it's like, it's a really amusing form of half lying. Like, whenever you're caught doing something that you shouldn't be doing, like, it's really insidious. Like, like, Ben, is that lipstick on your collar? Well, while it is possible that could be someone's lipstick on my collar, isn't it also possible that I fell into a lipstick display at the mall? Like, it's that sort of stuff. Like, it's deflective dishonesty. And,
right.
And it really plays towards what we know about Data. Like, Data doesn't lie, but he can sort of erect... He's like jingling his keys at the rest of the crew, trying to distract them from from the path that they're on.
Don't pay attention to the man behind the curtain.
Yeah.
So they have this McLaughlin group
issue one
where they're kind of hearing the doctor and Data out on these issues, and Picard is he stops the doctor from like really like losing her shit at Data by holding up a hand, and then says, you know, Data, the transformers on deck 12 need realignment. Why don't you head down there and help Ensign Carlos out with that? He's waiting for you. And Data's like, all right, bye. It's like, man, like you can be as transparent as you want when you're sending Data out of the room.
Picard basically throws a tennis ball out of the conference room and Data goes chasing after it and the door shuts behind him.
Yeah. Yeah, and you just hear him whimpering on the other side.
Yeah.
I wish we had some clean audio of my dog whining that we could drop in there, but he always seems to whine when I'm talking, so you can't edit it out.
Yeah, I know
fucking
the feeling.
Fucking frustrating. So yeah, they're like, it seems like Data is trying to feed us a line, doesn't it? Seems like he's not being totally forthright, and that is really strange, really... uncharacteristic. So they decide to like look into it a little bit more. And the two things they want to look at are, can they prove biologically that they've spent more time than Data is saying? And can they prove with the ship's clock that they've spent more time than they're saying? And so Geordi is on the clock and the doctor is on the biology. She gets Ensign No Lines to come down from transporter room and she does some scans and she's like, yeah, like this, like her cell decay rate or whatever would indicate that she was out for 24 hours, not 30 seconds. And Geordi's like, guys, this shit with the clock is even freakier because the clock has definitely been tampered with, but the only two people on board the ship that would even know how to do what happened are me and Data.
And I sure as shit didn't do it. I mean, whenever daylight savings comes around, like, I leave the clock wrong for, like, a period of days.
Yeah.
You got to do that thing when you reset the computer clock. You got to, like, hold two buttons at once for, like, 3 seconds until the clock starts flashing.
Yeah, and then production. It's just hours and hours of pressing the up because it goes by minute. There's no way to put the hour up one. You have to do it.
It's such a nightmare.
Press that button 60 times. Give me a break.
That's why all the clocks in engineering just flash 12, like an old person's VCR.
It is the guiding principle of a Starfleet base. Have you not find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth? You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
So this is pretty terrifying, right? Picard has Data into the ready room and is like, I think that there's either something wrong with you or something wrong with the universe, but I'm gonna have Geordi like take you apart and see if you can figure out what's wrong.
It's real betrayal vibes here because like everyone on the crew has basically effectively been roofied and everyone knows that Data has something to do with it. Only he's not saying anything.
Yeah. This is an episode that is really interesting in terms of the lack of music. Like, there's almost no score in large swaths of this, and I feel like if they'd played some little creepy, you know, some creepy little music in some of these scenes, it would have been horrifying. Because, like, the strongest guy, the fastest guy on the ship is deceiving them for some unknown reason, and, like, they're all starting to, like, really realize how fucked they are in the face of that, and it is terrifying. Like, they're all playing it for how terrified they are of what's going on with Data. And I felt it was kind of surprising that they didn't try to make it a more tense episode by just dropping a little music bed in.
I prefer when the show is a little more subtle, especially with their music cues. But
yeah,
I had not noticed the lack of score in this episode the way you did. And so I think it speaks to how effective it was for me and how notable it was for you in an interesting way.
Interesting. So they get Data's head taken apart and they're like, scanning looks great. And so they're like, there's still just, you know, a lot of head scratching going on. And then Worf winds up in Six Bay and he's like, hey, listen, my wrist really is killing me.
A warrior does not complain about physical discomfort, but the captain ordered us to report anything out of the ordinary.
And the doctor scans it and she discovers that his wrist has been broken. And so now they're thinking maybe they were awake during the 24 hours because the only way Worf's wrist got broken was if somebody else was on board the ship or if Data did it. And it's not like Data's going to break his wrist while he's asleep.
So. Yeah, the only person who ever does that is Riker.
Yeah, but he's he makes sure to get prior consent.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Riker doesn't fuck around.
I know that, but I was talking about in a purely masturbatory sense, Ben.
Oh. Yeah.
What Riker does in his sleep, I think, would terrify most people to even consider.
Um, Yeah, so they're like, all right, well, the answers to this are going to be back where we come from. We're going back to that planet. So they head back there, and Data keeps going like, let's not head back there. I think it's a terrible idea. And they're like, why? Tell us why. Tell us what is going on. And Data's like, I can't. I won't. And Picard is like, you know, if you're lying to me, like, you're going to be court-martialed.
I realize that, sir.
You also realize that you would most likely be stripped down to your wires to find out what the hell has gone wrong.
Yes, sir. I do.
I'm pursuing this the way I'm supposed to. And so Picard is, like, at this point, like, you know, Data's inability to, like, say an outright lie has led Picard to get enough information to realize that Data is operating with a set of orders that Picard is unaware of. And so when they get to this planet, this big cloud of green crap comes out of it, and Data's like, let's go, let's get out of here, this is a bad place for us to be. And Troy gets, like, taken over, right?
Yeah, this green gas goes into her face.
Yeah.
And then she gets a real deep voice.
They, like, shoot it at them, right? And they're like, it's moving too slow to be a photon torpedo. And they're like, well, it's gonna hit us.
Should we do anything?
Yeah. It's like in Austin Powers, right?
Yeah.
Get out of the way!
We know there's, like, literally thousands of evasive maneuver codes that the ship has and that people yeah. know about, but they just, like this thing throws a banana cream pie at them and they just stand there and take it.
Troy starts going around the ship, and she's got, like, super deep evil Troy voice going, and
she's got,
like,
Dr. Girlfriend voice.
What's that?
From the Venture Brothers. Do you not watch that show? You not watched that show?
Sorry.
Oh man, I feel like we're just on different pages with our pop culture references lately, Ben. I don't know what it means.
Maybe we need to think about packing it in.
Let's not do that. We're almost halfway there.
Yeah, we're really close to halfway, aren't we?
Yeah.
So yeah, she's like, this evil plan is not working. And Data's like, no, like, we could make this work. Let's talk it out with the captain. And so they go back to the bridge, and Data does a little exegesis on, like, the, like, what the answer to the mystery is. It's like, it's sort of like Holmes monologuing at the end of a mystery, where he explains, he does exposition on everything that has been a question. And, like, you know, the deal is they got passed out by these aliens in the green cloud. I think they're called the Paxans. And the Paxans are xenophobes. They don't want anybody to know that they live in this planet. They don't want anybody to know that they exist. And so their deal is that anybody that comes close, they just use this advanced technology to knock them out. And they send them far away, and everybody just assumes it's a wormhole. It's like the CIA assassinating somebody but making it look like it was a heart attack so that there's no retribution.
Right.
And so, like, this has worked for a long time, but they've never come across an android before, and Data was immune to their knockout gas. And so, like, they cut a deal because Data managed to wake them up before they were able to complete their plan. They cut a deal where, like, okay, why don't you guys wipe our memories and we'll just have Data lie about this ever having happened. And he's, like, a totally trustworthy guy. You guys into that? And so it turns out Data's been lying this whole time because he's so fucking trustworthy.
Yeah. I lied to protect you. See, that's not bad.
Yeah.
That's actually good.
It's good. They convince the Paxans that they deserve a second chance. Like, the problem was not the plan's premise, it was its execution. Like, they left too many little clues around the ship, and if they can, it's sort of like when the Romulans abducted Riker, and he told them about how how many flaws their plan had. It wasn't that it was a bad plan, it just wasn't executed properly.
Right. Yeah, and Riker does not chime in here at all with that. Like, he'd be... His experience would actually be pretty useful at this moment.
Yeah. Yeah. So
Picard's like, give us another chance. Come on. All we have to do is remove all the clues, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, for whatever reason, the Paxan is like, you guys seem worthy of a second chance.
Yeah, you're I like you guys. Like, I hate all guys, but I like you guys.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they give them a second chance, and they, the end of the ep is them all waking up and kind of going through the same beats that they went through on the last one, but it's like slightly different. Data is slightly less shifty and suspicious, and they're like, all right, well, we'll just shoot a probe back at the planet and get on our way. And I guess we have to assume that it worked.
Yeah, I mean, the button on the episode is a slow push into Data. He launches the probe. He does that that satisfied head tilt. And we're out. Everything's fine.
It is really fun to think about there being an episode that none of the characters but one has any memory of.
Yeah.
Isn't there?
Yeah.
I love that.
It's sort of like when you read the IMDb of a show and you see which characters were in every episode.
Yeah.
And then you see one of the main cast members isn't in one for some reason.
Yeah.
It's kind of screwy.
That is really weird.
To keep
weird.
Score that way. Ben, we know Guinan exists out of time. She said it.
Yeah.
But the only scene that Guinan is in is at the very beginning, the Guinan goes camping on the holodeck scene. Like,
right.
It seems like she would be a great person to talk to when they're chasing down this mystery, but they totally forget about her.
Yeah, it's real strange.
What do you think happens when Guinan falls down with that big hat? It could probably break her neck. It's really dangerous.
Or what if it's like a protective ring that like provides like a flexible bounce to her head, you know?
It's like those big inflatable balls that people play with on sports fields, like they get inside the ball and then they run around and bounce into each other.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's like that.
Yeah, you gotta hope that when Guinan passes out she isn't like cleaning her nubby ass alien assault rifle.
I think it's a convenient omission of her character that I think you have to do whenever you have a Deus Ex Machina character around, you know, like mm-hmm. you can't, if she was always around, every tension in every episode could be corrected in a moment. So
yeah,
I get it, but you don't need the beginning, you don't need the cold open at all, because all it does is tease her existence and make her absence more felt later on.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Well, did you like this episode?
Yeah, I really did.
Yeah,
a
it's
lot.
So good, right?
Yeah, it's really great.
Yeah. I mean, it's not without its problems, and I don't know if we've come across one that was flawlessly executed, but it's so fun.
Yeah, I really dug it. And it really, like, again, it brought up the whole trust issue with Data, which is a fun piece of canon to explore.
Yeah. This is a couple episodes in a row where Worf really gets caught with his pants down security-wise, right? Like,
yeah.
The last episode, his captain was abducted off the ship, and he's like, wait, what? You're not on the ship?
Yeah, and in this episode, Troy walks onto the bridge as someone who's been taken over by the Paxans, and he dives over the horseshoe, is ready to like, bring her down, and Troy just does, like, grabs him by the wrist and flips him over.
Yeah.
And not a good look for Worf at that exact moment.
No. I was talking to our friend Sarus Farivar the other day.
Yeah.
Who's in Brooklyn. And he was telling me about, like, like the first time somebody told him about Star Trek, like when he was a kid. And they were telling him about how they're like, on a spaceship and they spend most of their time on the bridge, and he's picturing like an actual bridge over like a body of water. And
that sounds nice, it
jogged loose a memory from my childhood that I thought what they meant when they said bridge was the wooden horseshoe thing.
I thought that's
what the bridge was when I was a kid. I would say probably like the first 3 years I watched the show, I was under that impression until, like, you know, I asked my dad or something and somebody cleared it up for me. But there's just so much about this show that I look back and I am embarrassed about myself.
That's fun.
Adam, I believe we have a Priority One message. Maybe we do, maybe we don't, but I say we go check out the communications relay.
We got to turn our Priority One keys at the same time. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
3, 2, 1, turn!
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we have one Priority One message on the board here today, and it is from Sean Cratchin to Joanna McCarvel. And here's the message. Hope this is a big surprise for you. Happy anniversary! That's really fun.
Big surprise.
Yeah. That is like, that might take the cake as the shortest one we've got. Short and sweet. Do we want to put a little bit of our own stank on it, Adam?
I imagine that that Joanna has been dealing with surprising shit from Sean for quite a while. This being maybe the most surprising moment of their relationship.
I wish you a happy anniversary. I wish you all happy anniversaries everywhere.
Tomorrow being Thanksgiving, the most difficult holiday for me to control my impulses. I eat all the scalloped potatoes.
It really plays into the two main things about me. One, love of family, and two, genocide. It's incredibly difficult to control my impulses on this day of days.
For many years, me and Roshan would sit down to a meal of hooshnack.
Did I ever mention that I consume the bodies of my enemies?
Roshan prefers the white meat of the hooshnack. I, of course, grab hooshnack leg.
The hooshnack Pope's nose is the best part of the beard.
I hope that was surprising enough for you, as it surprised me with how dark that got almost immediately.
Yeah. Happy anniversary, guys. Thanks for listening to the show.
Yeah.
If you'd like to leave a Priority One message on this podcast, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. And it's a big help.
Yeah. We're doing birthdays and anniversaries.
Yeah. The occasional commercial message.
Yeah.
Let's get some commercial messages going. We get twice as much money out of those.
Let's do it.
Yarmouk and Jalad and Tanagra.
Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work. Some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean. With Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leader in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it gonna be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one, an Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it, and I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Ben, did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda this episode?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I did, Adam. My drunk Shimoda is Worf. And we actually were just talking about this, his jump over the horseshoe. I feel like in an episode where Worf's role as a security officer has been sort of cheapened by what's at play between Captain Picard and Data. Like, he basically had one thing to do, which was to keep a Troy with her mind taken over away from other members of the bridge crew. And he chooses to do that by, like, he's like within 6 inches of her with his dustbuster before she grabs him and just tosses him across the room. And it's like, dude, you could have just stayed where you were standing, drawn your phaser, and stunned her. Like, you don't need to get any closer. Like, is your aim that bad? Because if it is, we've got a problem, Worf.
Oh, and Buffalo Troy voice is so creepy. Nice try, Worf.
It puts the phaser on the floor, or else it gets its wrist broken again.
You're a big fat Klingon, aren't you? yeah. Not feeling great about the security on board the Enterprise.
Yeah. How about yourself? Did you have a Shimoda of the drunk variety?
I did, and it's tangentially related to the security thing you bring up. When they, a little bit after, they bring Data into the McLaughlin group and then dismiss him. I want to say a couple of scenes later, Picard brings him into the ready room and is full on accusatory with him about the lie.
Yeah.
And there is a random security person there in the ready room that, because we didn't see the beginning, we can assume escorted him in.
Mm-hmm.
And when Data is dismissed, Picard's like, get the hell out of here. Go back to engineering. Random security person, escort Data there. And Data's like, I know the way. Like, I can find it myself. Security person goes with him anyway, because that's what a security person does. But
yeah.
What is a security person supposed to do with a possibly weaponized Data at that moment? She's like the goat that was fed to the Tyrannosaurus in Jurassic Park. Like, she's going to get in a turbo lift with him they're going to get to engineering and it's going to be like the elevator in The Shining. It's going to open up and and the security person is going to wash out.
Yeah.
And Data is going to emerge unscathed. Like, yeah. They have no answer for the Data problem still.
Yeah.
And so like, my Shimoda might be the security person herself, but it might just be the ongoing problem. The idea that there is no security that can save them from Data.
It's a good one, Adam.
Hey, Ben, what are we watching for the next episode?
The next episode is Season 4, Ep 15, First Contact. Critically wounded during a first contact mission, Riker is mistaken for a hostile alien. You remember this episode, Adam?
Well, Riker is hostile, but maybe not in the way that they think.
Do you have any recollection of this?
I don't have any recollection of this. I'm happy to be getting a Riker episode. I feel like he's taken the last few off as a character. He's just sort of a potted plant lately.
Yeah. He was like, I got to get some of that Marina Sirtis action. I don't want to do any heavy lifting after Future Imperfect for a little while.
He and Colm Meaney are in the trailer just drinking and hanging out on their shoot days. Ben, this is also the halfway point of our series. Did you know that?
Oh, really?
Yeah. First Contact is the exact halfway point in the Star Trek The Next Generation television series.
Interesting.
Which makes it also the halfway point for us.
Yeah. Interesting that it is the name of the great Star Trek The Next Generation film as well.
It's true. How do you feel, man? Almost a halfway. Feels like it's gone fast.
Yeah. I mean, it's all downhill from here.
Yeah.
We have a lot less turkeyage in the front window than we do in the rearview mirror. So I'm looking forward to it. But
plenty of caviar too.
And we have we still have some vetoes left. I mean, not this season, but the next couple.
Yeah.
So that's exciting.
Let's use them this time.
Well, if you have enjoyed the first half of The Greatest Generation and would like to see a second half, you can go to MaximumFun.org/donate. Support our show on a monthly basis. It really makes a big difference in our lives, and this takes a lot of work to get it up to the spec we like it to be at. I think, Adam, you said it's like almost at this point a one-day-a-week job.
Yeah.
I would even go a little further than that, because I definitely think about it like every single day.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, people will, having gone to our live shows, realize that I have a huge speech impediment and stuttering problem that takes hours and hours of editing to remove. And you have sort of a thing, like, besides all the profanity... you have all these mouth sounds that we have to take out every episode. My mouth sounds as well. It's just a real mouthy piece of engineering we have to do to this to round it into shape and deliver it in a way that is consumable in any way.
Yeah, I really envy some of the podcasts where the people are good enough to just record an hour of them talking to each other, throw a little theme music on the front and back, and
that
put
is
it
not
online.
Us.
No, yeah, we have a lot of crutches, and while we really enjoy doing it, it makes it a lot easier to justify when we can, you know, at least defray costs, if not make a little bit of money off of it.
Yeah, when we're doing this, we can't work, that's for sure.
That is for sure. So that's a great way to support. You can buy t-shirts at maxfunstore.com, and... if you want to sign up for our mailing list to hear about upcoming live shows, assuming the ones that we are about to do / have just finished are
assuming we
successful.
Haven't been arrested and briefly imprisoned.
I think there's a chance that we will keep doing that. So keep your eye on a mailing list. Go to gach.biz/mail and sign up for that. And we should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusea for our other music, the Priority One music and the Worf Door music that you sometimes hear. Made that out of the kindness of his heart because he likes our podcast. Adam Ragusea is a great guy. What else do we got to say? Oh, social media.
Yeah, you can talk to us on the Twitters using the hashtag GreatestGen. I am there, of course, as at Cup for Time. Benjamin is there as at Benjamin R, A-H-R.
Yeah, we're on Facebook. There's a Facebook page and a Facebook group and a Reddit sub, greatestgen.reddit.com, or the Max Fun sub is maximumfun.reddit.com. Both great places to talk about the show. And with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and a critically wounded episode of The Greatest Generation.
That feels about right.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.